With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. From economics to the woke agenda, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, welcome back to the program. We're in our second hour. Later in this program, in the first break, Thomas Corbett Dillon will be joining us, a former advisor to Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK. We'll be talking about US and European politics and UK politics and the election, of course. All right, just in, New York City is moving forward with restricting and regulating emissions from wood-fired pizza ovens and the few coal-fired pizza ovens left in the city as a tradition to save the planet. 75% reduction in emissions, Mayor Adams has actually stated. This is about climate change. This is the latest on what's going on with pizza and the climate. Clip one.
In New York City, officials have quietly approved a new controversial green initiative. The plan requires pizza parlors and matzah bakeries using decades-old wood and coal-fired stoves to cut their smoky pollutants by 75%, in news first reported by the New York Post. Under Mayor Eric Adams, the Department of Environmental Protection announced the new regulations will take effect April 27th. Approximately 130 businesses in the city will be affected by the new rule, with many expressing opposition. Some concerned citizens have also questioned why pizza ovens were being targeted instead of diesel trucks, calling it a burden for small businesses. Meanwhile, some pizza establishments have already complied with the upcoming mandate and have already shelled out more than $600,000 installing new smoke eating systems. The rule covers ovens installed before May 2016, in line with a law passed in 2015 under then-Mayor Bill de Blasio's administration, requiring coal and wood-fired pizza restaurants to curb their particulate emissions. Those unable to meet the requirement must submit assessments explaining why, with a minimum goal of 25% cut in emissions.
And up to 75% cut. This is hammering what's left of mom-and-pop, family-run, traditional pizzerias in New York City. It's just one city. But man, is it frightening. This is exactly akin to what happened in the Netherlands with the farming under net zero compliance. They were coming after nitrogen-based fertilizer, methane, all sorts of restrictions on farming and land use. Who was it going to impact? Who couldn't afford the cost? The small, family-run, traditional farms, small and medium size. They go under these kind of regulations. Of course, they fought back, formed their own political party. They're fighting back actively right now. And all of European farmers are. But if these plans go through, like on farming, you're going to get big corporate agribusiness, billionaire-owned, like in the United States, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, two of the biggest, single largest farmland owners in America. They can afford the costs. The big corporate Chinese-owned equity asset, they can afford to absorb these costs. Big corporate chains, not the small ones. And that's what's going to happen with pizza. All those costs, all the compliance, it's going to cost more for pizza. It's going to cut into their profits. And what? Pizza Hut and other national chains will take over. And they don't want you using wood-fired oven because of the planet and particulate matter. By the way, the same particulate matter they're worried about. When you look at EVs, the studies show that because of the heavier weight and the weight on the tires, they're spewing way more particulate matter than any gas-powered cars, yet somehow those are classified as green. It really isn't about the wood burning or the very few coal burning fire plant, coal ovens in New York City. This is about hammering small businesses. It's about clueless environmental regulations. It's about making the earth happy. Let's hope New Yorkers can fight back against this strongly and fighting. I wrote an article, op-ed in the New York Post last June of 2023. Green madness. You'd have to burn a pizza stove 849 years to equal 1 year of John Kerry's private jet. These are the wood-burning stoves, is the equivalent almost 1,000 years of John Kerry flying in a jet to your average, you know, pizza oven that they're so concerned about. And they actually asked, why don't they ban diesel trucks? Why don't you ban private jet travel? That seems to be the lowest hanging fruit. And that's my question. Rather than regulating and raising the cost of pizza and putting out small-time family-run pizzerias in New York City, why not ban private jet travel, landing and takeoff at all New York City metropolitan airports? Just imagine that for a moment. Would that ever fly for even a second? Gee, who would that disproportionately, that would disproportionately impact the millionaire and billionaire in corporate class? And we can't have that. But hey, if we could screw over the small mom and pop and the small businesses and the media, the hell with that. They're not billionaires. They can't fight back. That sadly is the world in which we live. And I think as the previous guest said, I sound like a left winger. Well, so be it. This is a new world in which we live. We're left and right. It's no longer left and right. It's up and down. Freedom versus tyranny, the regulatory state, the administrative state, rule by expertocracy, rule under crisis, rule under emergency power, rule with corporate government collusion, or freedom. And we have to choose freedom. And I know it sounds silly because we're just talking about pizza, but this is where we are. Okay. In my article, New Yorkers are once again suffering from the hands of unelected food police. New Yorkers have already been endured former Mayor Bloomberg's attempts to ban soda sales of over 16 ounces for their own good. This is the food police in New York City. Kathy Hochul, the governor of the state of New York, of which New York City is in, has tried to ban gas stoves and gas furnaces in the state. It's incredible how it's just ban, ban, ban. And every day you wake up, it's some new unelected bureaucrat doing this. I go on about Kerry's private jet, which I just already explained to you. Here's an interesting point, though. I interviewed physicist Dr. Will Happer from Princeton University. He explained that restrictions on wood-fired or coal-fired pizza ovens may actually increase the carbon footprint of pizza in New York City. How is that possible? To the extent that wood-fired ovens are replaced by electrically heated ovens, which I suppose is what is intended, CO2 emissions will probably increase in New York City. The most electrical power probably comes from burning gas or coal. For a gas-fired pizza oven, all the heat and combustion is used to bake the pizza. For an electric-heated oven, you have to convert electrical power back to heat. In other words, you're going to end up raising emissions potentially depending on what they replace these gas and the wood burning and the coal-fired oven pizza ovens with. What's the goal here? To have everything corporate, to have us eating microwave pizza? Because microwave pizza runs on electricity. That should make the earth smile. Let's have microwave pizza. That's basically ultimately where this nonsense leads, is just to insane, illogical, inhuman conclusions. It's not necessarily inhuman to eat a microwave pizza, but the idea that you're doing all this and restricting regular pizza, what made New York City pizza unique, the old, very few coal in the wood-fired ovens. Okay. We talked about this briefly in the last hour with our guest, James Woodhouse, but the puberty blockers, sterilizations, will no longer be prescribed to children in Britain and due to the potentially severe negative side effects. These are little examples of pushing back against this madness of the critical race, of the jet transgender ideology, of the net zero, of the biosecurity, public health tyranny state. Watch this. This is clip 3, an explanation. This is good news. They're not mutilating the kids and doing irreparable damage at very young ages right as they enter puberty. Clip 3.
Let's just bring you a bit of breaking news, which may be of interest to some of you. It's about puberty blockers. Now, these are drugs that are used to delay the changes of puberty in transgender youngsters. In terms of how they are prescribed by the NHS, there has been a lot of controversy over the last few years about this. At the moment, they are only prescribed to children attending gender identity services as part of clinical research, and they are not routinely offered to children at gender identity clinics, but they are still offered. Well, the government, NHS England, has just confirmed that children will no longer be prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics. This is coming from NHS England, that just broke in the last few moments.
Wow, that's a very little bit of good news. Doesn't cover the whole EU, doesn't apply in the United States. We're under Obamacare. medical. They had all this funding for these counselors and schools and hospitals. And of course, for these procedures now covered by insurance. Procedures are one thing, but you will still hear the transgender activists actually say openly and falsely, well, we can just give them puberty blockers to give the kids time to sort out what they want to do. Once you block puberty, you're having irreversible changes in your development, in your bone structure, in your voice development, in your height, and a whole host of other issues, hormonal. You can't just turn off and on. It goes back to what I was quoting the historian about the Nazi regime in the 1940s. You can't use bureaucracy, corporate government collusion to basically legislate and enforce magical beliefs. And believing that puberty blockers just buy you time while you decide what gender you want to be, you can always, you know, reverse it. That's a magical belief. And finally, the UK is recognizing it. Let's hope that sanity drips over to the United States. And I'll have a clip tomorrow of Riley Gaines, who I got to meet last year. She's the swimmer who had to compete against the biological male who was claimed to be a woman and tied with him and then didn't get the trophy. But she's got some incredible comments to make on that. And I'll have that for you tomorrow. Okay. On the same thing, RFK Jr. has been, I showed you his State of the Union response. Here he is now exposing the chronic disease epidemic. What happened with food, I guess it started in earnest. I guess it started World War II. Let's go back to that. Again, I'm talking U.S. centric here. I don't remember the percentage. It was something like a third, maybe it's 25% of all draft conscriptees and enlisters for World War II were considered to be malnourished, underweight, not healthy by government standards. So there was a whole effort made to push the idea of fortifying food, drinks with all the essential minerals and vitamins so that you wouldn't be malnourished. You'd get the proper nourishment. So this led ultimately to a, and of course, other factors in play. We had the rapid industrialization following World War II, the big economic boom, the growth of the suburbs, the national highway system. So food distribution took on a new variation. The advent of processed food. It was in the 1950s, late 40s anyway. You can go back and see all the old cereal ads, you know, the cereals processed in factories and thrown in boxes. Instead of eating, you know, eggs and oatmeal and bacon and sausage, and homemade bread, or at least bread not processed, you would be eating, you know, cereal from a box. It was quick, it was easy. And this is what sort of led to that. So fast forward to the 1970s with this processed food, then they come up with the food pyramid. And the idea is you should be eating this many breads in this high carb diet. And you end up with a huge government recommendations on food, which lead to obesity and all that. Anyway, that is what RFK Jr. is talking about. And this is from government, bad government policy designed to help people. And yeah, we don't have malnutrition in America anymore, but you have a lot of unhealthy people, which of course, then you need a lot of medicines to treat all the conditions. And of course, the conditions of these medicines, what do they end up doing? They end up enriching big pharma, who, and then the medical community doesn't actually tell people or educate you on how to, not that I would need a doctor to tell you, you should eat better and exercise. But the idea is they're just fine with everyone being out of shape, overweight, and with all these illnesses because it's more profit for them. This is RFK Jr., clip 5, talking about how he sees America's chronic disease epidemic. We're not feeding people, we're poisoning them. Let's take a listen.
Chronic disease, when my uncle was president, 6% of Americans had chronic disease. Today, 60% do. And, you know, our kids are getting buried by it. I talk to young people all the time, and I hardly can meet one that doesn't have an autoimmune disease, doesn't have a neurological disease, reading disorders, learning disorders, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, sleeping disorders, ASD. Autism has gone from 1 in 10,000 in my generation, 70-year-old men, to 1 in 34 kids in my kids' generation. 1 in every 22 boys. Food allergies suddenly appeared around 1989. You know, I had 11 brothers and sisters, about 70 first cousins, and none of them had a peanut allergy. Why do 5 of my 7 kids have food allergies? Something is poisoning them. Why did diabetes today? When I was a kid, a typical pediatrician would see one case of diabetes in his entire career, juvenile diabetes. Today, one out of every three kids who walks through his door has either pre-diabetic or diabetic. Something's wrong. We're spending more just on diabetes than our entire military budget.
And he's on to something there. Now, of course, there's a lot of other factors besides just diet. There's a book called Last Child in the Woods about how for the 50s, 60s, 70s, children spent so much time running through the woods outside, playing, getting physical activity. And today's kids are computer screens and video games, et cetera, which all contributes to what RFK Jr. is explaining there. And I would like to have a food expert on. There's a couple I have in mind that would explain this. I take this issue personally. I, you know, was a yo-yo dieter for much of my life. And finally, and many times I'd lost a lot of weight and keep it off for a little while. But finally, 2013, I lost 80 pounds and have kept it off now going on, I guess that's 11 years. And I did it through a book. Actually, this might be an interesting author. It's by a food strategist who basically said, you know, you have to look at the way you eat with strategies. You can't just say eat healthy or portion control. It's all about, so I designed a whole system based on my schedule and my lifestyle. And it's really an impressive system that this book author designed. Anyway, but that was one of the things. Okay, but we're going to have to take a break here. One last clip. Ben Shapiro. No one in the United States should be retiring at 65 years old. Retirement itself is a stupid idea unless you have some sort of health problem. Let's take a listen to Ben Shapiro, clip four.
And let's be real about this. It's insane that we haven't raised the retirement age in the United States. It's totally crazy. Joe Biden, if that were the case, Joe Biden should not be running for president. Hey, Joe Biden is 81 years old. The retirement age in the United States at which you start to receive Social Security and you are eligible for Medicare is 65. Joe Biden has technically been eligible for Social Security and Medicare for 16 years, and he wants to continue in office until he is 86, which is 19 years past when he would be eligible for retirement. No one in the United States should be retiring at 65 years old. Frankly, I think retirement itself is a stupid idea unless you have some sort of health problem. Everybody that I know who is elderly, who has retired, is dead within 5 years. And if you talk to people who are elderly and they lose their purpose in life by losing their job and they stop working, things go to hell in a handbasket real quick.
Yeah, very entertaining. I don't know that I agree with all that. I'm not going to bash Ben Shapiro for that. He's doing a talk show. He's trying to be provocative. He's saying a lot of things that are, I would argue, are exaggerated. The idea you should never retire. It depends on the person. Some people find value in their jobs. Other people, if you're working in a factory or some other job that you don't like, you're not going to be happy, and retirement could be the best thing. You could have a chance to pursue other interests. And I know many people who live decades and decades and decades past their retirement age into their 90s. So I don't buy that. I think the real issue from a public policy perspective is why can't people retire today? I remember Walter Williams, the economist, talked about African Americans, how they got the raw deal when it came to Social Security, especially African American men. Because the age of benefits, whether it's 63, 65, was close to the life expectancy at the time. This is about 30 years ago. I haven't looked at the latest. But the idea is they pay into this system their whole lives. And just when they would get their benefits, their average life expectancy ended. So the question really, it comes down to our society, the way it's structured, and you know, a way to get retirement income and a way to for investments and 401ks and for pensions and other things, and lowering the cost of living and home ownership and using. So there's just so many different things rolled up into that. But this is all over. This is a viral comment. It's on Twitter. It's one of the leading viral things on all the social media apps. Ben Shapiro created a firestorm here. And again, there is no rule. When he says should, I don't know. It's all independent based on a person. I know people who love retirement and they're just, and doing a million different things and you know look at a job as a grind. Other people would never retire because they love what they're doing. The old saying is if do what you love and love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life. You know, so it just depends. There's no way you can generalize to that extent. Anyway, silliness. That's absolute silliness, but that's your social media update on what excites people out there today. Okay, coming back, when we come back, we're gonna have Thomas Corbett Dylan on, former advisor to Prime Minister Boris Yeltsin. I'm sorry, Boris, that's for Russia. Boris Johnson of the UK. And we'll be talking about 2024 elections, UK, Trump, and how politics in general. Stay tuned. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or $1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining the program now is Thomas Corbett Dylan. He's a former advisor to PM Boris Johnson, not Boris Karloff, the man who played Frankenstein, not Boris Yeltsin, the Soviet premier that was, I think he was right before Gorbachev, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, Boris Johnson, welcome to the program, Thomas.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I was just doing a, I had a previous UK guest on before this, so it's, I guess it's the UK show today. We were talking about the UK and some of the net zero agenda going on. How is it going with Rishi Sunak? I know you had, I can't remember her name. I think she was only in office 3 years. The prime minister who succeeded Boris Johnson. I do not remember her name at all.
Liz Truss.
Is, first of all, yeah. What's her name?
Liz Truss.
Liz Truss, that's right. How is Rishi Sunak doing right now in the UK? Are people generally happy with him? And how is
it's a disaster.
Give us the update, because we Americans generally don't follow European politics or UK politics.
Well, you know, the simple fact of it is that the people voted for Liz Truss. And then, of course, the markets crashed or something, you know, and she had to resign and then everything was fine. And the guy that we didn't want, the guy that the people didn't choose, then became the prime minister. And now he's running the country, the person that no one voted for. So you can imagine how it's going. It's a disaster. So, yeah, not great.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, Mark Stein, the commentator, calls him Richie Rich. Is he, he's very wealthy. I think one of the wealthiest Brits, if I'm not mistaken, or one of the wealthiest prime ministers ever. Where did he get his wealth and where did he come from? And how did he become prime minister? I mean, we know how he became prime minister after she resigned, but what's his background?
Yeah, well, he got rich by marrying a heiress to the Indian $1 billion fortune. So didn't earn it himself, married into it. Which, you know, that's fine. We're okay with that.
We have that too.
Yeah,
John Kerry here did the same thing. In the U.S.,
yes,
John Kerry
exactly.
Did the same thing with the ketchup for heiress. But go ahead, continue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that's fine. But, you know, not a man of the people, shall we say. And I think in the rest of Europe, everyone seems to be, you know, moving towards more populism and being, you know, the rising of the people. Unfortunately, in the U.K., we are not seeing that. So it's a shame. Unfortunately, it looks like the Conservatives are going to be wiped out at the next election. And I guess we're going to have a left-wing government. So, yeah.
Now, just to be clear, when you say wiped out, will they be up for vote at the same time? Will Rishi Sunak and the UK Parliament all be the House of Commons, House of Lords? Does your vote, does it all happen at once or is it staggered
It does, yeah. So they're expecting, they have about 350 members. and they're expecting to lose about 300 of them. So it's not looking good for them, I'm afraid.
Well, I look at it, you know, I don't know much about Rishi Sunak, but how bad would the left-wing coalition be? I mean, we're talking, I mean, because Rishi Sunak's already bought into a lot of the net zero, right? He, at least rhetorically, and now I think he's backing away. But how much worse could it get in terms of, you know, the left-wing government coming in? What changes would that bring to UK?
Well, when we say left-wing government, I think they are further left than AOC. So could you imagine someone that, you know, is further left than AOC taking over control of your country? It is going to be a disaster. It will be the final, you know, nail in the coffin for the great British Empire. How far it has fallen. It is an embarrassing state of affairs, I'm afraid.
Wow. Well, give us the state of the update on net zero in UK. I read some reports that there's some backing away from a lot of the commitments, that Rishi Sunak's acknowledging reality. It's not working, or what's happening there? Is that contentious? And is there any actual back away, or is England just full steam ahead with the, you know, rationing of energy, transportation, and agriculture?
Well, they're trying to, because they're scrambling now, you know, trying everything to desperately save themselves from obliteration at the next election. But, you know, it's all too late. And the whole ridiculous thing about this is, can you imagine how tiny England is, how our levels are in the global scale of things? You know, even in America, people often say, well, what about China? But in England, you think that we could be 100% green tomorrow and it wouldn't make a single bit of difference. But what it does make a difference on is the lives of people. You know, my mother is out sorting out this from that before she puts it in the trash. Meanwhile, China are, you know, launching a new coal plant every day. It's ridiculous. So, the UK, it's already on that path. I think it's starting to realize now that the commitment, I think it was 2030, is impossible. You know, most car makers now are realizing that the electric car is a complete disaster. We don't have enough resources to make them. So they are pulling away. But what we will see is a left-wing government come back in and probably, you know, put it even stricter regulations in.
Wow. Give us a little bit of your take on Prime Minister Boris Johnson's tenure as UK. What kind of an advisor were you to him?
My company worked in the digital space, so we worked on a lot of the social media content and things during the campaign. But it was hopeful. You know, we thought he was going to, you know, lead us through Brexit, deliver something of a victory in similar way to President Trump was being elected, you know, on the people, fighting for the people and you know, delivering a successful Brexit. Unfortunately, it fell apart very, very quickly. And he sort of left and disappeared. And now he's, you know, out in Ukraine continuing that war. It's a disappointment, really. I think a lot of people are upset. I think that is the main reason why the Conservative Party are going to do so badly at the next election, because people gave him a chance and he didn't follow through on anything.
This may be total gossip and rumor milling, but hey, why not repeat it? I've been told repeatedly that his wife, I guess her name's Fanny, that Fanny, I can't remember her last name, but he met
Harry,
her.
Carrie.
Harry. Okay. He met her and became a
I wish it was Fanny.
Okay. Harry. Okay. He met her and became a green activist due to his wife's influence. And essentially, when I remember hearing about him first, he was the mayor of London, and I was hearing a climate skeptic is going to run for prime minister. He, of course, reversed all of those views and became, you know, a huge virtue signal on that issue. What are your comments on that? And also, how did he handle COVID and COVID lockdowns?
Well, exactly. And the most annoying thing about the whole situation with the wife is that, of course, she was director of communications for the Conservative Party. These people are not conservatives. The Conservative Party in the United Kingdom is the American Democrats. They love Joe Biden. They agree with everything Obama did. They hate the Republicans. They refuse to even engage with President Trump. So you wonder why these people call themselves conservative. It's not. I wish we had a version of Rhino. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it. It's just a disaster. The UK is not in a good place, I'm afraid.
Now, I assume you're not living in the United States. Are you still in England?
I do. I live in the US. Yeah, I've been here. I came here. That was your other question. I came here during COVID. When they started to do all of that crazy COVID tyranny, I said, that's enough. I'm off to the land of the free. And I am very glad I did. It was much better here.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what are your, what is your take on U.S. politics right now? You have, is this some kind of psychological psyop? What's happening right now? The mainstream media keeps pushing this polling showing Donald Trump with basically a huge lead at this point, or well beyond the margin of error, leading with women, leading with Hispanics, doing historically well with African-Americans. Should we as conservatives or any Republicans out there just say, hey, the election's over, Trump won, let's celebrate now? Why don't we just start celebrating early? What's your take on it?
I wouldn't start celebrating just yet. You know, I never put anything past the American state. They are very nervous to have another President Trump, you know, administration, not only because I think he's already publicly said that a lot of them are going to be, you know, investigated and sent off to, it's like the classic line of the Hillary, because you'd be in jail. I think he's back with a vengeance. So I think they're very worried. I don't think it's necessarily over yet. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Biden maybe gets swapped out for someone else, or there's some sort of reason. Anything could happen. We are a long way from November, let me tell you.
What do you make of RFK Jr.? He appeals to the Democrat base, at least the traditional Democrat base. Recent polling, I think it was Arizona, shows him almost in a three-way dead heat between Biden, Trump, and RFK Jr. Do you think he'll be a factor in the way Ross Perot was a factor, say, in 1992, 1996 in the U.S.?
Yeah, I like him. I like what he's saying. I think that I would like it if the Republicans maybe took some of his talking points. I think his line on, you know, pharmaceuticals is very good. He's seemed to have been on the right side of many issues. His COVID stance, of course, is very good. If anything, it'll work towards the Republicans because it'll split the Democratic vote. I don't see many people voting for him over Trump. But I don't think this is the last we're going to see of him. I could definitely see him in the future, you know, running and running again. He's done a good campaign. He's stuck in it. He knows how to create content. He gets the social media stuff out there. So I think he's good. I think that he is saying things that the general public need to hear. And that's a good thing.
Now, have you had similar situations in the UK where the opponents of a power player in politics, they've just done court case after court case, trying to bankrupt him, bankrupt everyone around him, arrest people around him, and try to jail the opponent? Like, have you ever seen anything like what they're trying to do with Donald Trump on all these different states with all the Democrat attorney generals? Like, the legislator in New York actually met to overturn statute of limitations on rape charges so that Donald Trump could have to go to court, even though it was well past any statute of limitations. And then after the trial, they, you know, the law expired and they got rid of it. Have you ever seen anything like that in UK or Europe? And what do you take on that, where they're just essentially the entire establishment is at war with the former United States president?
I've seen it in the Soviet Union. I think we've seen it in Africa. We've seen it in the third world. Yeah, we've seen it in dictatorships. And that seems to be what we are going into. It seems to be the way to get yourself ahead in the Democratic Party is to give hits into this guy, you know, that they're obsessed with him. And it is just brilliant to see it backfire time after time again, when you've got, you know, Fannie Willis, for example, just getting ripped apart. You know, it's the classic line, if you're going to come for the king, you better not miss. And these people keep missing and their careers are destroyed over it, you know.
Wow. Yeah. So when you mentioned that COVID, the U.S. was better, give us an idea of what happened in Europe. One of the things I remember hearing is you guys didn't close the schools like we did here in America, but you still had all the lockdowns and the mask mandates. I assume you had all the vaccine mandates. How was it different? And it seemed like you were suggesting America was much freer than, say, England. In what ways, and how do you compare the two responses? Of course, we had Trump's response versus Biden here in the U.S. It changed, but go ahead.
Yeah, so the English schools were closed for a while. They reopened them. But, you know, our lockdown in London and in England was unbelievably stricter. I mean, you would get stopped by the police if you were out of the house and you needed a reason to be out. And the only reason was going to the grocery store. If you'd already been to the grocery store that day, you'd be issued with a fine. There's a famous video of a drone being flown over the park in Yorkshire. And they were issuing fines to these people. I mean, it was just the craziest thing you've ever heard of. But of course, that's all forgotten now. It never happened. We skimmed past all of that. They're sort of like, oh, you know, sorry that we ever went that extreme. Will you forgive us? No, we won't. And we'll never forget. But yes, so I came over here. I moved to Washington, D.C., which was, you know, it wasn't as strict as Europe, but it was strict. Of course, then I went to Florida, which was like, you know, going back into the old world. It was fantastic. If anything, it was better than pre-COVID because all the cool people were in Florida. So it was a good place to be. And it was good. It showed how your federal system works very well because your states were competing with each other to be the most libertarian, to be the most open, to be the most, you know, welcoming for its people. In the UK, what we saw was Scotland, Wales and England competing to be the strictest, to be the most extreme. Scotland was way more extreme than England. Wales was just a complete dictatorship. So it's a shame. It's a disappointing state of affairs. But that's what happens when you don't have any rights in a bill. You know, we have no freedom of speech. We have no freedom of assembly. We have nothing. So it's very lucky that the United States has that.
Of vaccine mandates, did England have them just like we had them here for employees and for restaurants and gyms and the whole like?
Yes, they didn't have in the same way, though I think they did. I mean, that started to come in when I was here, so I sort of started to ignore that. But I don't know if they had the military as extreme as you guys did, you know, where they just basically fired everyone that wouldn't take it. I imagine they did. I imagine we just didn't hear about it too much. But yeah, they you know, they forced everyone to take it, basically, yeah.
Well, one of the things we have now is the Biden administration is pushing for the U.S. to get involved in this World Health Organization pandemic treaty, where basically Bill Gates funded scientists at the WHO could declare a global pandemic and all the participating countries would sign on. Is England all in on that kind of stuff under Rishi Sunak or is he?
Of course they are. Absolutely. Anything in the globalist agenda is fully signed up by the British government. They're probably leading the charge on this. And you know how well that worked last time. They think the one thing that they complain about is that the countries didn't do exactly what they wanted them to do. Well, imagine if we had have done that. Imagine if we'd have been as extreme as the WHO was calling for us to be. And that's what this new bill will do. It will force. It'll say even if you're a Republican president, even if Trump is in charge, he's going to say, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. We've signed up to this treaty." You know, it's basically if NATO, you know, ends up going to war, the America has to do it. So if the WHO decides there's a pandemic, this is the rules. You guys, our hands are tied. We have to do it. It's outrageous.
Wow. That's coming up in May again, this pandemic treaty and all the amendments, the World Health Organization. So when you look at England today, and you say there's your conservative party is equivalent to our Democrats. Is there another party or how do actual conservatives then get elected in England?
Yeah, there's a couple of parties rising. There's this Homeland Party. They're quite good. They're, you know, pushing for more nationalist message and saying, you know, that the UK is in the wrong direction. We've got a Reform Party that sort of Nigel Farage is involved in. Their message is, I have to get it right. It's not make Britain great again. It's like make Britain be great or something. You know, it's like a little twist on the MAGA.
Yeah.
But they're trying their best. But nothing has the same, you know, push that the MAGA movement has. They're trying, but we don't have the guy. We don't have Trump yet. We need someone that can fill those shoes.
Could someone like Nigel Farage, you know, former parliament member, talk show host now, could he ever run? Could he get popular support, you think? And is he considered conservative?
Could. He could. I actually saw him at CPAC just a couple of weeks ago, and I said the same thing. I said, Nigel, you know, my country's, its future is in your hands. You're our only hope. And he's sort of saying, well, you know, it's a nightmare. Why would I want to go into that life? The media are going to destroy me. They're going to pick me apart. They're going to destroy my family. He's like, why would I do that? I'm like trying to remind him that, you know, there's a bigger thing at play here. It could be him. But, you know, the English system is very difficult. It's not a presidential system. He couldn't just stand up and say, you know, elect me for president. It's much harder than that. So, you know, he needs to build a party. He needs to get multiple members elected. It's a complicated system.
Oh. Well, he was in the news last year because he did a Freedom of Information Act request. I can't remember the name of the bank, one of the largest banks in England, though, and found out he got debanked because, according to the Freedom of Information documents, the bank's own internal documents revealed they debanked him because of his views on climate change. He was a climate skeptic, and they actually would not allow him to bank at the institution. Is there a lot of that going on? I mean, there's some of that going on here in the U.S. beginning. Is that more advanced in Europe, where like you get canceled because they don't like your political views by a corporation?
Very much so. It's, you know, if it happens to Farage, think of all the smaller people that is happening to that don't have the platform like that. And you say it's not happening here too much. Well, I say just wait. It will come. It will happen. They are slowly marching towards that level of it's much harder in this country because your great founding fathers were very smart and they put it in a bit of paper. Your freedoms are in a bit of paper. Europe has no such bit of paper, which makes things much easier for these governments to take away our freedoms. But you know that they oftentimes they do a similar thing. I mean, we see internet companies here, a PayPal, for example. They block a lot of right wing people. I forget the names of the other one, like Shopify, I think, all of these places that, you know, will easily take down Republicans' donations. I think it's like Give, Send or whatever, you know, one of these donation things. They won't allow conservatives. It's happening. It'll only get worse here.
Okay. All right. We're taking a break. We're talking with Thomas Corbett Dillon, former advisor to British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Now living in the U.S., escape to freedom. But the question is, if we lose the U.S., where will people escape to if we lose our freedoms here? So we are in the process of losing them. Anyway, we'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
From weather and traffic reports to news of political developments, we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. One in three adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
Fearless, informative, and unfettered. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT. I'm your host, Mark Morano. All right, we're continuing our discussion with Thomas Corbett Dillon, former advisor to British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. You alluded to the U.S. is becoming more and more like that. We're down the road. Why do you think Europe was always way ahead of the U.S., including England, when it comes to, you know, certainly environmental standards, a lot of other, you know, so you could argue socialist or statist things? Is it just naturally a more liberal people, less conservative, or what's the politics of the whole continent and specifically UK?
Well, yeah, I think it is mainly to do with a lot more protections in terms of protecting the people. You know, a lot of the I'm always surprised by a lot of the ingredients that I see used in American food, from even in Coca-Cola being different over here. You know, a lot of the ingredients here are banned in Europe. The corporations here are very powerful. The lobbying is very powerful. Whereas in Europe, there's a lot more restrictions on that. So, you know, Europe doesn't get it right always. But I do think when it comes to protecting its people, sometimes it gets that right a little bit more than the US.
You don't have high fructose corn syrup in every soda and just about every processed food like we do in America. You're missing out.
It's sugar. It's like, I think you call it Mexican Coke here. So we have Mexican Coke in Europe.
Well, yeah, I was just talking about the food regulations. But in terms of Europe, why are they more? So in terms of this, on the green agenda, for instance, if people always say, if you want to know what's going to happen to the U.S. with energy, look at what's happening in Europe. Give us a snapshot of what's happening in terms of electrical rates, in terms of bans on fossil fuels, specifically in terms of since the Ukraine war started with the sanctions against Russia and the pipeline being blown up. Where is Europe stand right now on affordable energy and domestic energy?
Well, they've been racing towards these renewable sources, which of course is proving a disaster. It's like the electric cars. It's unbelievably expensive to produce. It's not reliable. It doesn't work at all. And it lasts for maybe 10, 20 years until you're replacing the entire windmill. You know, France has it right with its nuclear power plants. But of course, then we see Germany decommissioning all of these things because the word nuclear is so scary to these leftists. When in fact, actually, you know, the UK often has to borrow energy from France, because the French system is so much more stable and completely renewable. Meanwhile, the UK has got these huge offshore wind farms that have, you know, been in for maybe 10 years or so, and now the whole thing needs to be replaced. So the corporations that have lobbied for this are very happy. They're getting very, very rich off of these systems, but it just doesn't work. It's not a good system, and it's not working as it was promised to us.
But it's amazing if you go back a few years back during the UN Paris Agreement, all the others, I think it was actually years ago, it's probably 2006 or seven. Tony Blair, remember, along with people like Angela Merkel, they would did these UN summits standing up, I'll limit the Earth's temperature to 2 degrees. I'll do 1.5. Almost like they were at an auction. They seem to be further along on the virtue signaling on climate than many in the US. There's not even a debate. Like, for instance, you mentioned the UK has no conservatives. In the Conservative Party in UK, they all accept climate. Basically, the climate's in crisis. We need solutions. And the net zero is the way to go. Is there any dissenters among that in Parliament or in the House of Commons or anywhere?
No, there's a couple, but you know, nothing like anywhere near the mainstream. And of course, if you say anything along those lines, you're completely written off as a conspiracy theorist. But you know, yeah, it's they've fully signed up to it. And as you say, you know, these are supposed to be conservatives, and they're, you know, if anything, often they tend to be further along than the left wing party tends to be, you know, because at least they argue for the jobs that come with coal mining and things. The right are completely all on board with this green agenda. The Conservative Party even for a while changed their logo from blue to green to show how green they were. Yes, they are fully committed.
Wow. It's just amazing. What about free speech? Now, in the U.S., social media, we get all the warnings. If you write about certain topics, COVID, you get the government warning. We have all the fact checks. We have the banning, the people being disenfranchised, taken off. We have all of the, canceling. We had the whole thing during COVID where like Harvard doctors and Princeton and Stanford, they would be defunded, canceled, ripped off of all, you know, media outlets. Is it bad in Europe? Because maybe we have more corporate government collusion than Europe, or is Europe just as bad when it comes to free speech issues?
Well, you have all of those things that you listed. I will raise you one and say we have jail. They will send you to jail. If you tweet something, if you post something, we just saw it today. A member of a Belgian politician was involved in a group chat with his friends where they shared some problematic memes. He is now going to jail. banned from being a politician. They are so far along the anti-freedom of speech movement in Europe. It is almost beyond the point of no return. You will be sent to jail. We had a man, Sam Malia, I believe his name is, was sent to 2 years in jail in England for printing stickers that said it's okay to be white. Straight to jail. You know, these people are dictators. We have no freedom of speech in England. And we are slowly marching towards that in America. That is where they dream of. As I always say, we are so lucky that in the United States to have that little bit of paper that enshrines your freedom of speech, because they will take it away in a second if they can.
Well, given that England doesn't have that sheet of paper throughout, you know, the last 100 years, has it ebbed and flowed in terms of the people's right to speak and censorship? Or how do you guarantee that without a constitution, without a Bill of Rights like in England? It's just up to the, you know, whoever's in power, up to their, they serve at the interests of whatever their whim is?
Yeah, of course, this new thing is hate speech. You know, they've decided that, you know, oh, you can say whatever you want as long as it's not hate speech. Well, the whole point of freedom of speech is that I can say anything. There is no restriction on that. If I want to say that that man in a dress and a wig is not a woman, I'm allowed to say that. I don't care how offended you get. But in the UK, you will go to jail. You cannot do that. We saw it with J.K. Rowling, you know, one of the greatest authors of the last 50 years. Has been reported to the police because she refuses to call a man in a dress a woman. It is so far gone in England, it's unfortunate.
Does she still live in England or did she escape?
She does, yeah. She's in, I think she has a beautiful castle in Scotland. She's living the dream.
So can they go after her? Is she too wealthy and famous to actually hear that? Because it seems like if the average person did that, they would probably lose their job. They'd be debanked. They'd be canceled. They'd be, you know, if they were renting or had an Airbnb, they'd be thrown out. I mean, how does she get away with such an unconventional view in today's politically correct
culture? I think it's because she's that's the only view she dissents on. Everything else, she's fully signed up to the left-wing agenda, except for the. You know, trans stuff. So I think they give her a pass on that, because I think a lot of people in the you know, upper echelons agree with her. They just won't say it publicly. I mean, we saw the UK just banned puberty blockers for children now, which, you know, to many on the left in America is the most outrageous thing you could do. But the UK has just done that, which, of course, everyone agrees is a step in the right direction. So I think she gets a pass. But it wouldn't be that far. I think she's a billionaire, so she's rich enough that she doesn't have to worry about those things.
Yeah, in terms of the banning the puberty blockers, I just had a story. Was that court ordered, or is that you actually voted on that? How did that work?
I actually don't know. I imagine it would have been that the parliament voted on it, because what we are seeing now is the Conservatives are realizing that they're on their way out. So they're quickly trying to put a lot of things in law that will stop the left-wing party when they take over from doing all of these things. So that's probably the best thing that the Conservatives have done in a long time. But, you know, that's a little scratch on what we need to do on that topic.
Now, in the U.S., we are a big issue is immigration, the southern border. What are your thoughts on having a wide open border? And does England have the same problems, or is England a model? You're an island, after all. I mean, Great Britain. So aren't you immune from any effects of illegal immigration?
You would think. But unfortunately, boats arrive every single day. The great Royal Navy has finally given up and has allowed us to have, you know, not even open borders. We have open seas. You can get a boat from France and come to England. They arrive every single day. And even worse, if you get into trouble once you've crossed that line, the Royal Navy will come and rescue you, pick you up and give you a ride to England. So, yes, we have a very bad immigration problem. And it's almost as bad as the United States. We are such a smaller country that, you know, such a delicate push over that line where you get to the point where there are more people taking out of the system than there are paying taxes and paying into it. And we are already past that point now. It's a real shame.
All right. Well, we only have about a minute or so left. So where do you see we have the whole thing, the World Economic Forum pushing this great reset. You have net zero going apace. You have the pandemic treaty trying to combine climate change with public health. You have the crushing of the middle class, both in Europe and the United States. Are you optimistic for the next 3 to 5, 10 years, or is this just a continued decline of the West? How do you find optimism in this? Give us hope.
I am optimistic. I think it's the fight of our lives. And what we have been seeing is people rising all across. Finally, people are rising. Men are standing up and saying, this is enough. And we are seeing people, you know, being sentenced to jail, people being sent for, you know, 15, 20 years in jail for standing up for freedoms. And, you know, we care for those people, but, you know, this is the fight. This is where we are going. It's going to be tough. But if we want to survive, we have to fight.
All right. And, you know, prediction. I don't know if we actually asked you, who's going to win, Trump or Biden?
Hopefully Trump. I hope that it's going to be Trump.
You're not confident.
But I wouldn't put too much money on it.
All right. Thank you very much. We're out of time. Thomas Corbett Dillon, former advisor to UK Boris Johnson. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.